Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to convene this informational hearing of the House K-12 Education Finance Committee to review the E-12 omnibus bill from product of the 2019 legislative session. A couple of procedural items so that everybody understands kind of where we're at right now. It was a unique end to the session, I think might be a fair way of putting it. So the content of the bill is largely driven, particularly the fiscal aspects, largely driven by the leadership agreement and directive of about 1 a.m. Tuesday morning, and then the work of the conference committee. Important for this discussion today is note that we are not working off of a bill. This is neither a House file nor a Senate file. This is a revisor's document, 19-5220. Because of that, and because, of course, we're not in session and so cannot take any formal action, we will not be amending the bill. We will not be voting on the bill. We are not able to take any action related to the bill at this this meeting of the committee. I do want to thank the conferees. Chair Joachim, Chair Pinto, who is unfortunately in Public Safety Committee walking through that, the product there as well, so he's not able to be here. Representative Sandsted, who decided after 2 weeks of not seeing her family that she'd like to see them, and they apparently were okay with that, so she stayed there and will return for the special session. And then Representative Erdahl as well, who was noticed about the meeting. But he may be testing to see if his wife wants him back for a couple of days as well. I'm not frankly sure. Want to also thank the both partisan and nonpartisan staff for all of their efforts. Everybody knows they're amazing. I learned they're even more than I'd anticipated or understood of that by going through this process with the conference committee. And I'm grateful, as I hope all committee members are, and frankly all Minnesotans should be, with the efforts that they provide the state. So thank you all for that. Ms. McGinnis from the revisor's office is here also, as always, keeping an eye on us after I don't know how many long, extra long days assembling the product we're looking at now. With that, I would say revisor's document number 5220 reflects a number of significant House priorities that we went into the conference committee hoping to achieve. The 2% and 2% increases in the general education formula, coupled particularly with the over $90 million in special education funding to freeze that underfunding after years of allowing that to grow, goes a long way towards stabilizing school budgets. Which will help schools deliver on the programs that students currently receive and retention of staff that they currently employ for those students. The continuation of the voluntary pre-kindergarten program for 4,000 students across the state at 80 different sites was a critical priority of ours and is reflected in the bill. And importantly also for us is further steps towards diversifying our teacher core, and I'm very pleased with that. A number of important policy priorities were met as well. Chair Joachim, do you want to highlight any of those policy priorities?
Mr. Chair, we were able to do some stuff around dyslexia screening. We had a lot of policy provisions that were same and somewhat similar that we were able to adopt. Unfortunately, a lot of our policy that might have been different on both sides, we never really got to in the time frame. We kept hearing the refrain, but it's not a policy year, so I am really looking forward to doing a lot of policy next year. But we have we did do a lot of great work around teachers of color and indigenous policy, and like I said, the dyslexia policy around some school safety stuff with lead, a lot of about three-fourths of the governor's policy provisions in his bill, but we still have a lot left to do. So, like I said, I'm really looking forward to next year.
Very good. Thank you for that. With that, I'd ask staff to lead the walk through the bill. Ms. Adrians, if you wanted to start with the change sheet, that would be a great place to start. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. In your packets, you should have three different spreadsheets, one of which is the levy tracking, one of which is like the total aid tracking, and then the one that I will walk through is the change page. So it is just, it's just one page, and at the top it says general fund change items only. So if you all can orient yourselves to that, I will quickly walk through it. On the very first line, so on line 8, this is the increase for the formula allowance. It is a 2% increase in the first year and 2% increase in the second year. And this is the total amount. So all of the categoricals that are linked to any increase in the formula, all the amounts are rolled up into this. And the amount in the first biennium is $388 million, and in the second biennium, it's $561 million. On the second line, this is the early middle college program. This is a change in eligibility for the program, and the increased cost for this is, it's just in the first biennium at $136,000. There's a trailing 10% cleanup payment in the tails, and that's why you see the $7,000 under fiscal year 22. On line 10, the pregnant and parenting pupil transportation. This allows pregnant teens to get have access to transportation. The cost for this is $112,000 in the first biennium and $111,000 in the second. On line 11, this is the PSEO for 10th grade non-public pupils. It allows 10th graders to have access, non-public 10th graders have access to it. Currently, it allows for 11th and 12th graders only. The cost of this is $10,000 per year. On line 12, this is the sparsity revenue. It allows Carlstadt Elementary to access elementary sparsity aid, and the cost of this is $147,000 in the first biennium. Once again, the amount that you see in fiscal 22, that's the 10% cleanup payment at $8,000. So this is just in the first biennium only. On line 13, this is maintaining the existing number of slots that currently are provided for voluntary pre-kindergarten. The cost of this is just under $47 million in the first biennium. And in the second biennium, the amount you see there, the $2.8 million, this once again is a cleanup payment, the 10%. So this is providing the increased number only for the 2021 biennium. On line 14, we are the this is for certificate incentive grants, and what the bill does is it cancels $860,000 from the current appropriation and reappropriates it in fiscal year 2020. And so what that does is it allows the program to have some extra time to use the funds that were previously appropriated. When we do these cancellations and reappropriations, there's a net cost of zero to the bottom line budget. So please keep that in mind. On line 15, this is funding for civic education grants. It's in the first biennium only at $150,000. On line 16, this is the construction and skilled trades counseling and report. MDE and the Department of Labor and Industry will collaborate on this report, and the cost is $150,000 in the first biennium only. On line 17, funding for Minnesota Center for the Book. It's in the first biennium only as well. It's $250,000. On line 18, this is a grant for the McPhail Center for Music. It's in the first biennium only at $200,000. On line 19, funding for the PTEC school grants. This is the public-private partnership. It's in both bienniums. The first biennium, the funding is $1 million. In the second biennium, it's just over $1.5 million. On line 20, this is funding for the Race to Reduce grant. It's a water conservation program. It's funding $50,000 in fiscal year 20 only. On line 21, this is a cancellation of $114,000 in from fiscal year 19. The program receives base and ongoing funding, but they did not use this funding in 19, so otherwise it would have just canceled to the general fund. And here it's recaptured for use in the education bill. On line 22, this is another cancellation and reappropriation of funds for the singing bass pilot program, also known as Rock and Read. $230,000 is canceled from the current biennium and reappropriated in fiscal year 20. On line 23, the same cancellation and reappropriation for Starbase, Minnesota. So it's $1.35 million canceled and then reappropriated. On line 24, this funding restores the tribal contract schools to the fiscal year 19 funding levels. The additional funding over their base is $3.4 million in the first biennium and $4.6 million in the tails. On line 25, this is another program where they just were not going to use the money, so rather than let the money just cancel back to the general fund, the committee cancels $200,000 and is able to capture it for use in the education bill. On line 26, the Collaborative Urban Educator Grants, also known as Q, increases their base funding by $99,000 in fiscal year 20. On line 27, this is funding for the Minnesota Council on Economic Education in the first biennium, only at $235,000. On line 28, this is a cancellation and reappropriation of $1 million for the Northwest Regional Partnership. On line 29, this is also a cancellation and reappropriation of $400,000 for the Statewide Concurrent Enrollment Teacher Training Program. On line 30, this is funding for the Teachers of Color Initiative for Mentoring and Retention Incentive Grants. It's $1.5 million in the first biennium and just under $1.5 million in the second biennium. On line 31, there were in the bill, there are things to reform the special education formulas and to provide some cross-subsidy aid. The total amount over the base for special education programs is almost $91 million in the first biennium and just over $142 million in the second biennium. On line 32, this is one-time funding for suicide prevention training for teachers grant. It's $265,000 in fiscal year 20. On line 33, the early learning scholarships, there's a cancellation and a reappropriation of $4.5 million. And then this program is also transferred to the special revenue fund from the general fund. On line 34, the college, this is the St. Paul College Savings Account Pilot Program. The funding is one time in the first biennium of $500,000. On line 35, Reach Out and Read Minnesota. This is the program that does a number of things, one of which is provides books and parent education at well child visits. The funding is one time in the first biennium of $150,000. On line 36, this is an increase over the base of funding for the Tier 2 grants within the Education Partnership Program. What this does is it increases the number of recipients who receive funding and also increases the amount per recipient. It was previously $160,000 per year, and this funding increases it to $250,000 per year, the total cost of which is $1.5 million, and it's in the first biennium only. On line 37, this funding provides 100% reimbursement for high school equivalency tests in the first biennium only, and that's a cost of $240,000. Now we're getting to the agencies. On line 38, BOSA, this is a fee increase for BOSA, which is held within the Minnesota Department of Education. The increase in the fee goes from $75 to $100. And so this is also a net zero effect. You'll see down below there's a revenue line, so it's $87,000 per year. On line 39, MDE had money to cancel, so again, it would have fallen to the general fund if it were not recaptured here. So the cancellation amount in the current biennium is $2.5 million. And then the need still exists for litigation fees, and so That amount and more was reappropriated and also appropriated for fiscal year 2020 of $4.7 million. On line 40, this is funding for MDE's mainframe system. It's $880,000 in the first biennium and $960,000 in the second. On line 41, this is an operating adjustment, an increase for the agency. In the first biennium, it's just over $2.9 million, and in the tails, it's $3.3 million. On line 42, this is an operating adjustment for the Minnesota State Academies. In the first biennium, it's just over $1 million, and in the second biennium, it's $1.1 million. On line 43 is an operating adjustment, an increase for the Purpich Center. In the first biennium, it's $485,000, and in the second, $550,000. On line 44, Purpich received funding for severance payments that were paid, that were paid out when Crosswinds closed. The remaining funding that is not needed is about $720,000. But $800,000 remains, so $800,000 was canceled from the current biennium, and then $80,000 is reappropriated to take care of any remaining disputed amounts, and then the rest can be recaptured for the rest of the education bill. And then down on line 53, as I mentioned before, this is the revenue portion for the fee increase for BOSA of $87,000 per year. And I just want to point out that I mistakenly did not put the $87,000 in the tails. So on both lines, 38 and 53, it should show $87,000 per year as well. That's an ongoing increase in revenue capture as well. So, Mr. Chair and members, if you'll look at line 56 at the very bottom, this is the net total for spending in the 2021 biennium, it's just under $555 million, and in the tails, it's $720,000 after you account for the fee increase revenue. And then if you include the cancellations from the fiscal 18-19 biennium, which are just under $12 million, then you get to the to line 58, and these were the budget targets given to the conference committee of $543,000 in the first biennium and $720,000 in the second. I'm sorry, million. That matters. Mr. Chair and members, I also just want to make mention of two things. If you look at the very bottom, there are two notes. One thing that to point out is, and it's not in the tracking, but within the bill, there is funding that would be made available for the Safe School supplemental aid to the school districts for fiscal year 20 only. This money is contingent upon the closing balance for the end of the fiscal year for the general fund. So if there is funding available, then up to $30 million will be appropriated for the Safe School supplemental aid program. And then also, because in the bill, in previous versions of the bill, we had an operating referendum equalization amount, I just wanted to make mention that currently the omnibus tax bill contains that program. It's at a reduced level. Within the committee, we had the bill previously had $25 million reduction for starting in fiscal year 21 and then in the tails as well. But currently in the tax bill, it's $10 million per year. And Mr. Chair, I think that's everything.
Thank you very much, Ms. Adrian. Mm-hmm. Questions from members on the change item sheet? Mr. Strom, do you want to walk us through the rest of the bill or start us walking
Mr.
through it?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd be glad to do so. Just to point out a couple of documents for you, you do have a district-by-district printout in the packet oriented on the landscape legal page for you. We've used the same definition of same elements of revenue that were there before, so the base revenue will be the same even though there's different categories of revenue included now on what changes, but the base amounts remain the same as previous printouts. So you can look up and down the district-by-district printout and see how districts compare. The second document you'll have is the House Research Bill Summary that Ms. Parra and I will walk through. We'll try to group things and not spend too long on the bill summary for you. And then third, I want to make mention of the process that's being used this year. The document in front of you from the revisor's office, 19-5220, has been posted for you, but there will be some changes made to that document before it's introduced and jacketed and introduced. And I want to just highlight very quickly the three categories of those changes for you. The first, I dropped two sections of the special education language, so those are back in the bill now in the version that will be posted. They don't affect the intent of what was intended there, but they will change the page and line references by adding a couple of extra sections. Second, there were some effective dates and cross-references scattered throughout that, because of the compromise of the House and the Senate, still needed one more go-round, and those have been incorporated as well. And third, there were a couple of cases where House and Senate approaches used the same statutory sections but took kind of different approaches to what was happening there, and there were a couple of duplicative sections, and there were a couple of sections that were amended and repealed, and a couple of sections that didn't need to be in the bill anymore at all. So those fit that third category where one idea or the other eliminated the necessity for those sections. None of those changes are programmatic in the sense that they're adding or subtracting a program. None are affecting Ms. Adrian's spreadsheet. But just so committee members know, the version of 19-5220 that you see now will be slightly different than the one that's introduced.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, with that, let's turn to the bill summary. The document's entitled House Research Education Omnibus, and I'll start by walking through Article 1. I want to make this as painless as possible for you, so I'm going to just group items for you so that we don't spend very long on them. Sections 1 and 12 of Article 1 have to do with the transportation of homeless Section 1 has to do with the transportation of homeless students and requires that this first serving district remain responsible for that transportation throughout the school year. Sections 2 to 4 expand the definition of textbook for purposes of the non-public textbook aid. There was substantial discussion in your committee about that provision this year. Section 5, this committee saw before from the governor's rec with the board control of extracurricular activities. Section 6 and 12 create the new transportation formula, a relatively small amount that Ms. Adrian's pointed out for the pregnant teens and teen moms to and from school programs. Section 7 is new to this this committee. This is the alternative pupils, which are the non-public pupils participating in PSEO programs. The Senate provision was added that includes 10th graders to make it parallel to the public school children who participate in PSEO and allow them to enroll in the same manner in CTE courses as public school 10th graders. Section 8, 10, 11, and 13 through 19 all are related to the local optional revenue. As this committee discussed, a provision from the governor's budget bill and the House bill that went off the House floor and was also in the Senate bill moves the board-approved referendum authority into local optional revenue and entirely separates local optional revenue and the board-approved authority from the voter-approved referendum. So that's what those sections all accomplished. Those were identical in all three bills. Section 9 is the basic formula allowance, as Ms. Adrian's mentioned. The increase in this bill is 2% each year, so you can see the new formula allowances of $6,567 in fiscal 21 and later, and in the intermediate year for fiscal year 20, $6,438. Mr. Chair, members, then, if you turn to sections 20 and 21, these were the two provisions that created fixed some obsolete references and updated on the abatement program, updated the programs that are used to calculate abatement aid. Section 23, as Ms. Adrian's mentioned, is the Carlstead Elementary School sparsity. The mileage changed for them, lowering the mileage by 1 mile allows them to qualify. This is a two-year-only provision for fiscal years 20 and 21. And Section 23, then, Mr. Chair, is the appropriations section that we've spoken about. And Section 24 repeals several provisions, and you can see those listed there. Those include unused authority for payments to third parties, duplicative provisions, an obsolete provision related to a prior conversion of the referendum allowance, finally, the commissioner's authority to purchase individual annuity contracts, which was a provision contained in both the governor's bill and the bill that left this committee. Mr. Chair, that's Article 1.
Thank you very much, Mr. Trum. Ms. Barrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We'll be walking through Articles 2 and 3. Article 2, Education Excellence, the first section encourages a school district to offer a civics course for credit to 11th and 12th grade students. Section 2 is the dyslexia screening requirement, requiring the district to screen students for characteristics of dyslexia in kindergarten grades 1 and 2. If they have if they're not reading at grade level, and then a separate requirement for students grade 3 or higher. Section 3 requires the Commissioner of Education to establish an MCA testing period as late as possible each school year, and removes the requirement that the Commissioner establish empirically derived benchmarks on assessments for students in grades 3 to 8 through 8. Sections 4 and 5 both relate to the MCAs and changing how growth is measured. Section 6 allows an Opportunities Industrialization Center accredited by a creditor recognized by the U.S. Department of Education to be eligible for PSEO. Section 7 requires a district to notify a student of PSEO opportunities by the earlier of at least 3 weeks before registration or March 1 of each year. Section 8 requires a post-secondary institution to allow high school students to enroll in online courses consistent with the institution's policy. Section 9 clarifies that a student may not receive financial aid for a post-secondary course if they're also receiving secondary credit for the course. Sections 9 and 10 relate to a PTAC program that was from the Senate bill. It allows an eligible district to receive concurrent enrollment aid for a student in a PTAC school, and then Section 11 establishes the PTAC schools as a public-private partnership to prepare students for high-skills jobs in growth industries. Sections 12 to 17, it's a technical change that was in the original bill, substituting the term career and technical for other terms. Sections 18 and 19, that's the early middle college language. The Section 18 defines an English learner with an interrupted formal education as a student who meets at least 3 of 5 statutory requirements. And then those students would then qualify for early middle college program in Section 19 to serve those students if they qualify for the graduation incentives program, and it's for fiscal years 20 and 21 only. Section 20 requires that an American Indian Education Parent Advisory Committee submit the reasons for non-concurrence with educational programs directly to the school board. Section 21 is the tribal contract aid, increasing the aid to the BIE schools and linking it future amounts to increases in the basic formula allowance. Section 22 clarifies how administrative expenses are removed from the Achievement Integration Program funding. Section 23 relates again to the definitions of growth for purposes of the MCAs. Section 24 strikes a reference to a payment authority that was repealed earlier in the bill. Section 25 is the 25 and 26 go together. That's the certificate incentives revenue, where there's a cancellation and then a reappropriation. Section 27 clarifies that at least One service cooperative must collaborate to provide career technical education opportunities for the rural CTE grants. Those were established in 2017. And then section 2018 is related to that, authorizing the CTE grants for service cooperatives. Section 29 is a cancellation of the singing-based pilot program. It cancels $230,000 and returns it to the general fund. Section 30 cancels $1.35 million of the unspent 2018 appropriation for surveys. Oh, I'm sorry. For the singing base, that was reappropriated. And for surveys, that is also reappropriated for the 2020 and 2021 biennium. Section 31, it's another cancellation of the recovery program grants, and that cancels the $114,000 to the general fund. Section 32 allows the Breckenridge School District to enter into an agreement with out-of-state higher education institutions to do PSEO. Section 32-33 requires the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to study ways to allow for safety of middle and high school students to receive training in skilled trades and to report to the Jobs Committee and Education Committee. Section 34 is the appropriations. Section 35 is the repealer. And it repeals the definitions of growth, again, related to those changes in how we measure growth on the MCAs. And also repealing the vision therapy grants, which is what's being canceled. Mr. Chair, members, continuing with Article 3, the teacher's article. Section 1 prohibits the public employer of a Pelsby board member from reducing that member's compensation or benefits because that member is away on board business. Section 2, reading strategies. This requires a teacher preparation program for elementary education teachers to include scientifically based or evidence-based and structured reading instruction. And it requires programs for elementary education, early childhood education, special ed, and reading intervention teachers to include instruction on dyslexia and lists specific elements that must be addressed in that dyslexia instruction. Section 3 makes the technology strategies requirement applicable to all teacher preparation program providers. Section 4 strikes language relating to licenses that were in effect on January 1, 2018. Section 5 relating to background checks eliminates an obsolete reference to the Department of Education and eliminates the requirement that those background checks be performed by the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Section 6 modifies the military license fee. Section 7 requires background check fees to be deposited in accounts in the Special Revenue Fund. Section 8 clarifies the licensure via portfolio fees. Section 9 adds certain individuals to the mandatory reporting statute. Section 10 requires a teacher candidate that seeks a license via portfolio to pay the application fee, which would be deposited in the Special Revenue Fund. Sections 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 all relate to the American Indian Teacher Grant Program. Those were all in the original House bill. Those generally change the allowed uses for those grants, removing loans from those, and modifies eligibility for the scholarships and makes some technical changes. Section 16 is the Q Program, Collaborative Urban Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant Program. That was in the original House bill. It's a program that's been in session law for some time now, and this codifies it. So it goes in the statutes. Section 17 was also in the original House bill. This was part of the Teacher of Color bill that was heard. And it amends the teacher mentoring program and has some additional requirements around teacher mentoring. Section 18 clarifies the definition of eligible institution for purposes of PSEO. It requires districts and post-secondary institutions offering introduction to teaching dual credit courses to report on certain things. Sections 19 and 20 both relate to maltreatment of minors. The first section requires law enforcement to inform Pelsby or BOSA if it determines that a licensee has maltreated a child. And Section 20 requires the Commissioner of Education to provide the investigative file to a board, to the board when it determines that the licensee, when there's a maltreatment determination. Sections 21 and 22, those go together. The first is the Northwest Regional Partnership and Current Enrollment Program, and there's a cancellation there of the 2017 appropriation. And that is later reappropriated for the same purpose for the 2021 biennium. And then Section 22, there's a cancellation of $400,000 there, and that's also reappropriated. Sections 23 and 24 are appropriation section. Section 25 is a revisor instruction to codify the statewide concurrent enrollment teacher training program. And then the repealer, there are two things being repealed. One relates to the American Indian teacher preparation loan provisions, and the other, the special revenue account for a license via portfolio fees.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 4 is the special education article. There are some funding changes in here as well as some policy provisions. The policy provisions are Sections 2, 3, and 9. Section 2 is the additional requirements for prior written notice and the alternative dispute resolution. Section 3 regards the conciliation conference and requires the district to have a meeting of appropriate members of the IEP team when a parent who objects to the proposal requests the meeting. And it directs the district to hold a conciliation conference within 10 days or when the district receives the parent's request for the conference rather than from when the district receives the parent's objection. The remaining sections, and I should speak to Section 9 and then move to the funding, and then Section 9 requires the Commissioner of Education to amend rule to allow but not require an IEP to report a student's performance on general or state or district-wide assessments. The remaining provisions have to do with the funding scheme for special education. The funding is essentially that recommended by the governor and at the appropriations levels that Ms. Adrian specified. If I could group the changes, they're sort of in three parts. There's an increase to the regular formula. There's a new cross-subsidy aid created. That section in Section 7 shows that the cross-subsidy amounts the new cross-subsidy aid will fund 4.3% of the cross-subsidy in 2020 and 8.6% for fiscal years 2021 and later. The second set of the changes has to do with the tuition billbacks. Under this proposal, the amount paid by the resident district in most billback situations will decrease from 90% of the unreimbursed costs charged back by the serving district to 80%. And then as the governor recommended for charter schools, that difference will be made up in state aid payments. So charter schools will continue to receive 90% of their unreimbursed costs, 80% of that, 80 percentage points of that will come from the resident district and 10 percentage points from the state when that's fully phased in 2021 and later. For school districts, the resident school district will receive a tuition bill for 80% of the unreimbursed costs, but the serving school district will receive just the 80% back. So there's not a separate cash payment for school districts, just for the charter schools. The next change in the special education formula, which was part of the governor's recommendations, is to try and essentially bring the bottom up and the top, hold the top a little from growing quite as fast for those districts that are nearly fully funded through the special education system. And this is done in a couple of different ways. Section 5 reduces that multiplier on the grandfather clause. Right now, the statute uses the 2016 base, and each year the adjustment is 4.6%, and then there's also an enrollment growth. That 4.6% adjustment will decrease by 2 percentage points per year until the adjustment becomes 1.02%, a 2% per year adjustment. So for those, generally at the higher end of the revenue that are caught by the grandfather, that reduction will be slow over time. There's a second change that deals with the initial cross-subsidy aid and the way, the initial aid calculation for special education. And for those districts that are nearly fully funded on the special education formula, the growth rate will be slowed by reducing the top end of that calculation. So all told, then, with those changes, those conform to the $91 million that are shown on Ms. Adrian's spreadsheet. If you go back to the district-by-district printout, you can see in the columns for 20 and 21 on a per-pupil basis how that revenue is distributed amongst school districts. So you can look up and down the column there and see how the formula on a per-pupil basis affects districts. Finally, then, in Section 10 is the appropriations section, and other than the special education formula change, the remainder of the appropriations in this article are changes are baseline recommendations for appropriations.
Thank you, Ms. Vera. Article 5?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Article 5 is the health and safety article. Section 1 was in the House bill. It requires the Commissioner of Education to provide districts with mental health resources, and it lowers the age that could begin to down to grade 4. Section 2 allows a student to possess and use sunscreen at school. Section 3 modifies the definition of sexual abuse, and that's for purposes of the commissioner investigating maltreatment. Section 4 requires the department to investigate allegations that involve students ages 18 to 21 until graduation. Section 5 is that school safety contingency funding that was mentioned earlier. So it makes a one-time contingent appropriation of up to $30 million, depending on the closing balance at the end of fiscal year 2019, in excess of forecast levels. And those would be distributed on a per-pupil basis for school safety purposes. Section 6 is the appropriation section. And then continuing to Article 6, the facilities, fund transfers, and accounting article. Sections 1 and 2 relate to lead in school drinking water. And the first section adds charter schools and modifies requirements relating to what districts have to do once they find lead in the water, the plan they have to implement. Section 2 relates to the reporting requirements. If they find lead in the drinking water and they're required to remediate the presence of lead to below the level set in guidance, notify parents, verify by retest, and make the water source unavailable until the hazard has been minimized. Section 3, disposing of surplus school computers. Part of this was in the House bill already, allowing a district to transfer when there were surplus computers, to give those computers to enrolled students. The additional language allows districts also to transfer those computers to charitable nonprofit organizations registered with the Attorney General's office. Section 4 requires a public school or school district to enter and maintain monthly energy consumption data into the B3 benchmarking program, but there's no penalty for failure to do so. Section 5 adds service cooperatives to the definition of governmental units for purposes of joint powers. Section 6 is the fund transfers. It allows the Truman, Minnetonka, and Hopkins school districts to transfer funds, Truman to transfer from its ECFE reserve account and school readiness reserve account to its undesignated general fund, Minnetonka from its community education to the operating capital account for construction costs with early childhood community ed spaces, and Hopkins for the costs of constructing and equipping an early childhood classroom addition. And Section 7 is the appropriations.
Thank you very much. Who gets Article 7?
Mr. Chair, members, I do, but two steps forward, one step back. I just wanted to correct an error I've made in the bill summary. I think I spoke about it correctly, but for the special education in section in Article 4, Section 8, those percentages are reduced from 90 to 85%, not to 80% in 2020, and from the 90% to 80% for fiscal years 21 and later. So I apologize for that error in the bill summary.
Thank you, Mr. Strong.
I will redeem myself, Mr. Chair, with Article 7. There are appropriations on the tracking sheet. Mr. Chair.
Brevity is the soul of many things, isn't it, Mr. Strong?
Yes. Less chance for me to make an error. Mr. Chair, members, the Article 8 is the early childhood article, and there are a couple of different provisions in here. Perhaps the one consuming the most attention at the conference committee had to do with the voluntary pre-kindergarten school readiness plus program. The decision that was reached was to extend that program as is for two more years only. So a number of the provisions, sections 2, 6, 7, 8, and 11, are all related to the extension of the VPK program. Let me go through these in order as well, just very quickly. Section 1 on the program requirements broadens and clarifies that the measure, the formative measure used, must be age appropriate. As I mentioned, sections 2, 3, and 3 have to do with the VPK school readiness portion of the school readiness plus portion of the program. Essentially, the program stays as it was in the law that passed in 2017, and instead of expiring at the end of 2019, will now expire at the end of 2021. Section 4 was a provision that asked that school districts and charter schools record all of their expenditures in the VPK and school readiness style programs according to department guidelines. There's often, when business managers and others make coding decisions, there can be several right answers, and this asks for purposes of better information for legislators on the VPK programs that as much as possible that the districts code all of those expenditures with VPK. In terms of the early learning scholarship changes, there are the primary change is, in addition to the monetary change, the primary change is the creation of a special account in the special revenue fund. Essentially what this account would do is it would allow if there were, as there have been in the last several years, if there's surplus at the end of the year in the early learning scholarship appropriation, instead of that canceling back to the state general fund, by being in a special revenue account, that money essentially would be returned to the special revenue account and available in the next year. So this account is created, and because there's an estimated $4.5 million that will cancel back at the end of 2019, that money will immediately go into that account, and then future appropriations will all go into that account, and the money remains in that account until it's spent. The continuation of the VPK School Readiness Plus in Section 6 is the actual change of the pupil units to include those the way that they're currently counted for two more years. Section 7 and 8 are new to this document, and they have to do with the unusual tail situation when the VPK School Readiness Plus program expires. And there are two different effects that happen here. The first of those is, as members of this committee know, compensatory revenue is actually based on the previous year's child count at each site. For this reason, if School Readiness Plus is not renewed again in two more years, the compensatory revenue essentially attributable to those kids would continue for one more year. And this provision essentially says if those children are no longer being counted in fiscal year 22, that the compensatory revenue that they otherwise would have generated would not be there. Second, a similar thing happens with declining enrollment. Since VPK School Readiness Plus pupils are built right into the regular count of pupils, if those seats disappear in 2022, there would be some districts that would qualify for additional declining pupil unit enrollment. This provision excludes those pupils from that calculation. Sections 9 and 10 were in this bill as it left this committee and have to do with the background studies, allows the tribal organizations that offer early learning programs to contract with the Commissioner of Human Services to conduct background studies, and also for Head Start allows the very same thing. Finally, the Section 11, as I mentioned, is the there is an effective date that traveled with the School Readiness Plus program that expired at the end of 2020 or at the end of 2019. It eliminates that effective date entirely, and then the mechanism that would eliminate VPK, School Readiness Plus, is actually in the pupil unit definition only from here on out. Mr. Chair, members, the Section 12, as I mentioned, the current estimate, when this bill left this committee, the estimate then was there was about $9 million that was unencumbered in early learning scholarships. Since that time, we've gotten more precise information. Looks to be about $4.5 million that will cancel back. So the legislature is canceling that money essentially into the special revenue fund for early learning scholarships. Section 13 is the appropriations section, and Ms. Adrians has gone through those appropriations.
Article 9, Ms. Barrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Article 9, the Communicate Education and Lifelong Learning, has three sections. The first funds the high school equivalency test fees at 100% rather than 60% for fiscal years 2020 and 2021. Section 2 adds the list of characteristics that qualifying partnerships have to include in order to qualify for the education partnerships funding. And Section 3 is the appropriations section.
Thank you. Mr. Strom, Article 10.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 10 is the state agency article. The primary thing to mention here in terms of the policy change is that the House concurred with the Senate and Governor, and Pelsby and BOSA, instead of being in special revenue accounts, will now be back under general fund appropriations. So there's a number of provisions, especially in the repealer, but also in this article, in the language in some of these sections where those changes are made. Section 1 of Article 10 is the fee for administrators. The administrator's licensure fee, which is an annual fee, will go up this year from $75 to $100, and on Ms. Adrian's tracking sheet, you can see that $87,000 that will raise per year, and that money then will go to the Board of School Administrators. Sections 2, 3, and 10 relate again to the where the licensure fees for teacher licenses are deposited. Those will now be going, instead of going into the special revenue fund, back into the state general fund. Section 4 is the department appropriation from the previous biennium. And at that time, the Board of School Administrators was a rider on the department budget. And the direction there of the future appropriation going to the special revenue fund is taken care of. And then secondly, the current estimate for how much of the legal fees that were included in MDE's budget for paying for attorney general costs related to education-related lawsuits, the current number for that appears to be about $2.5 million that will not be spent in the 2019 fiscal year. So those amounts are canceled back out of the appropriation from the 2017 session. Section 5 is also amending the previous biennium's appropriation. This is the appropriation for the Purpich Center, and when that appropriation was passed, the fiscal note suggested that $800,000 would be the number that might be necessary to meet the obligations of the Purpich Center for the employees of the Crosswinds school that was closed. That number has turned out to be smaller than that, and the $800,000 is canceled back here as from the 2018 appropriation. And as Ms. Adrians mentioned, the $80,000 of that amount then is reappropriated in the current biennium. Section 6 is the appropriations for the Department of Education. We encourage members to look both at the tracking sheets, but also with the agency budget, there are a number of riders on the agency's appropriation, and in the language of the bill itself, members can see the individual riders. The Section 7 is the appropriations for the Minnesota State Academies for the current biennium and for the upcoming biennium. Section 8 is the appropriations for the Purpose Center for the upcoming biennium. And Section 9, now that Pelsby is entirely separate and from MDE, it's its own line item appropriation here, and you can see from the tracking sheets the amounts that are appropriated in fiscal years 20 and 21 to Pelsby. Finally, Mr. Chair, the repealer clause A and B of the repealer section all have to do with the elimination of the special revenue fund. And then finally, in the invisible ink, Article 11 should be appearing. This is the forecast article that's in the bill, but not in the summary. That was the same for the governor, the House, the Senate, and House File 2889. All of those are the forecast adjustments for the previous biennium. Those remain unchanged from where they were in the February recommendations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strom, Ms. Adrians, and Ms. Pera. Appreciate the attention. Questions from members on that portion of the walkthrough? Seeing none, this is a public hearing. It was posted as such. We have a relatively short list of people who've asked to speak. We, as has been past practice, have asked people to keep their comments to the best they can to 2 minutes. If you are not signed up to speak, that doesn't mean you are obligated now to get in line to speak, but you certainly are welcome to if you so choose. Before we do that, I don't see one person on the list who deserves a little shout-out. In the audience today is Mary Hartnett. Mary has spent 40 years serving the deaf-blind and hard of yes, deaf-blind and hard-of-hearing community in Minnesota the last several years as commissioner or as the executive director of the Commission for Deaf-Blind and Hard-of-Hearing Minnesotans. And this is her final session, or will be her final special session. And I just wanted to acknowledge that. Thank you for your service, tireless advocacy, creativity, and insight that you have shared for that community of Minnesotans in these halls for those years. Thank you for that, and thank you for all your service. Yeah. With that, Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Chair Daphne.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mary Catherine Ricker, Commissioner of Education, Chair Daphne, and members, I just wanted to take a moment first to say on behalf of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor, thank you so very much for your work on this, your tireless dedication and your ability to stick with it and work together, work with each other and work with us and work with the Department of Education. I very much appreciate that work. I am grateful for it, and I really appreciated working alongside you to get to this process. I want to thank your staff as well for their cooperation with my staff at the Minnesota Department of Education. I really look forward to seeing these investments in the ambitions of our students across Minnesota, in schools across Minnesota. This formula increase that we worked towards, combined with the special education increase, is the largest investment in 8 years in formula and special ed increases, in at least 8 years. And so I do look forward to what that can do for the ambitions of our students across Minnesota. I also want to say that the Minnesota Department of Education looks forward to continuing to partner with you on those initiatives that we have introduced both in this bill and that are currently in law. We look forward to the work we have to do ahead of us together. And I want to thank you for your time, and I will certainly stand for any questions the committee has on any of the department's recommendations.
Thank you. Any questions for the commissioner? With that, Commissioner, it was a pleasure to work with you this session, and I am also appreciative of your staff and all the efforts that they put in. I should probably take this as also an opportunity to thank the staff from Minnesota Management and Budget. Those folks are wizards with a spreadsheet and were extremely helpful, particularly in the closing of this bill. So thank you to them as well.
Chair Dabney, I would absolutely concur. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Grace Kelleher, Minnesota School Boards Association. Ms. Kelleher, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school board across the state of Minnesota. And I want to thank the conference committee, Chair Dabney, Yu Akeem, and Pinto, Representative Sandstein, and Erdahl for their tireless work day in, day out. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take an opportunity to thank your staff. They have been professional and a credit to this committee, and the House should be very proud. In this budget year, MSBA started out with funding being our key principle. You used the word stable earlier. We are interested in predictable and equitable funding. The original request was heard by the governor and the House, and the 3-2 was greatly appreciated. But I can tell you we felt great unease with the Senate's 1/2 and 1/2% going forward. Knowing that the 2% and 2% on the formula was a victory in a way over the 1/2 and 1/2%. But I want you to understand that school districts will still be doing budget cuts across the state, even with that number going forward. But I want to thank you and your committees for strength and tenacity to fight to get it that high. I want to thank you for the 4,000 VP voluntary preschool slots that came forward. Those 80 districts who received that, I'm sure, are breathing a sigh of relief. But I'd like the committee to consider about all the other school districts around the state who aren't as fortunate to have a voluntary pre-K program and want you to think about that going forward. Freezing special education costs going forward might be the most pivotal issue that impacts every school district around the state. Those costs must come out of our general ed fund when our special education funds are depleted, and that work alone was marvelous. We want to thank you for your pregnant teen transportation. We want to thank you for the forecast article in particular. And the only thing we really saw disappointment on was our special education paper reduction bill. And there were two key pieces, short-term objectives and functional behavioral assessments. They could have been a real game changer, giving our teachers more time with kids. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you in particular for your diligence and on behalf of Minnesota school children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Keller.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, can I have one more?
Absolutely.
Thing? Mr. Chairman, with your background in property taxes, certainly I would be remiss if I did not talk about putting taxpayer relief in the tax bill with the equalization for operating referendums. So I'd like to thank you not only for your knowledge here in K-12, but your knowledge of the property tax system.
Thank you very much. Next, I don't have a name, but Girls United Minnesota. I don't have a name, but I appear to have a crowd. Welcome to the committee. Please, as you speak, state your name for the record and then proceed. Who's up first?
Mr. Chair and members of the Education Finance Committee, my name is Carly Marshinke, and I'm a junior at Hopkins.
I'm Lucy Spears, a junior at Hopkins.
And I'm Sophie Homberger, a freshman at Minnetonka.
We are all part of Girls United MN, an organization that strives to empower and inspire the next generation of young leaders. We are grateful for the 2% and 2% increase in the per pupil formula and $90 million in the special education cross subsidy that you were able to fight for this session. It will make a difference in our education.
We were hopeful that our provisions surrounding Title IX sexual harassment training for school administrators would make it into the final bill. Schools are in dire need of support in creating a safe environment for us to learn in.
We know that it was a hard-fought fight, and we thank you for what you were able to do. But as the future presidents of Girls United MN, we are here to tell you that we will be back next year and hope you can commit to continue fighting for this issue in the next legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I should observe as I look at the climate change movement, gun safety, movement and the movement that you're leading on Title IX and gender equity. It's not about the next generation of leaders. You're doing it now. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Mr. Kroonquist. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I want to start by thanking you, Mr. Chair, and members for your tireless work all session, throughout the session, for your willingness to meet with us and to hear our concerns, our legislative platform items. We greatly appreciate it. I want to echo the thanks to the staff. They are amazing. They do incredible work. And as a former House staffer, I really appreciate and know how hard they work. Mr. Chair and members, we are, our legislative platform had many of the issues that you address in the bill. Some of the meat and potatoes issues are included in your bill, and we greatly appreciate that. I would highlight the formula, the special education, which was critical that was addressed, and we begin to start to bring down that cross-subsidy. At least this holds us level and makes some important reforms. The VPK slots for those districts was critical, so thank you for including that. And also the school safety, again, a high priority issue, and looking forward, our districts are looking forward to receiving those funds. I do have to just go on the record and note that the reason our board put 3 and 3 in the formula and actually a reduction in the special ed cross subsidies was because that's what they needed, really, to avoid budget cuts. And a survey that we conducted a month or so ago shows that under a 2% formula increase, 23 out of our 41 districts will need to make budget reductions. You're going to hear from one of our superintendents in a little bit, and she'll tell you a little bit more about how it impacts her district, and she's certainly not alone. There will be others that are in the same boat. That said, we know how this process works. You've got a target and that you had to live within, and we commend you for the priorities that you put in the bill within that target. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonquist. Mr. Lindell, and then on deck is Cindy Christ from MACD. Mr. Lindell, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lindell with Schools for Equity and Education, and also with Minnesota Association of Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, and also you'll be hearing from Dr. Julie Bunn more about the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. Much has been said, and you know that we very much in C supported the main items that were in our platform are addressed by this bill. We wanted money on the formula, the special ed, things that I think are very important and shared across all districts. Those are very, very important things to see, especially the general ed formula, because the way that the formulas work, the general ed formula is of increasing importance to see as opposed to many other districts. It's the place where the money comes from for C districts. Also, with the special ed, I think, as what Ms. Kelleher said, we would like seeing more on special ed paperwork. I think the new Ulm work was very well done. We would like to, and that's going to be an ongoing discussion. We know that that's going to be an ongoing discussion. We know we'll be working with you going forward. And also, again, working on the formula, special education formula. There's some things to do there as well. And again, ongoing issues that we'll be discussing. And certainly we're not in the realm of what was possible this year. As I said, Dr. Julie Bunn will be talking about the Council on Economic Education. But I wanted to diverge a little bit and hopefully not take more than 30 seconds. But one of the things that got kicked around this year, especially in the House, was the term aspirational. And it kind of angered me when folks were kind of dismissing aspiration as something that a committee should do. Our reach should always exceed our grasp. The governor started this session with a very strong statement on education. The House improved upon that. And I don't think we're sitting here today with this bill without the energy that was put in by the House and without the strength that you put forward to make a strong bill what we're in today. So again, I want to thank you and thank all the works, thank the work on staff, thank for the, all the legislators that carried legislation that I came to, the open doors that were always there waiting for me. And I think that, again, we want to work to meet the needs of kids throughout the state of Minnesota. RC motto is every kid throughout the state of Minnesota should have quality access to a high-quality education. This bill goes some of that way. I think what the House came forward with the $900 million target was the strongest statement I've seen toward meeting the needs of all students in many, many years, and I want to thank you for that. So with that, I'll just toddle off. I'll see you this summer.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lindell. Ms. Crist. And then on deck is Kate Schmidt, the president of the Dakota County United Educators, and Mary Krieger, superintendent of District 196. Ms. Crist, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Member Cindy Crist with the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. I want to share my thanks to the hard work of this committee and the staff, and particularly note what we appreciate is a very clear and open process that has been conducted in the House committees this year. That hasn't always been the case. It's always good to know what's going to happen and when. I think our individual members of MACD as parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, neighbors, educators, concerned citizens would find a lot in this bill to applaud and be thankful for. But our organization is a professional organization representing the preparers of teachers for licensure are really disappointed by the lack of progress and changes in Article 3 regarding tiered licensure. A disappointment that I know, among others, is shared by Chair Joachim, and I want to really thank her for her strong and solid leadership in that respect. I've testified before about our belief that profession requires demonstration of mastery of a body of work, and our current licensure structure does not require that for teachers to gain the Tier 3 license, which is the fully portable license. I've testified before about the strong body of evidence showing a correlation between well-prepared teachers and student learning. I've testified before that we believe that the claims that the changes that were proposed would disproportionately fall on candidates of color is simply not true unless we don't believe that those individuals could complete a licensure program or a portfolio in 6 to 8 years, and if schools in the state are unwilling to provide the support they need to get there. What I haven't testified about before, because I just learned about this, our special ed community is quite concerned because Minnesota will be at risk of losing IDEA funding because we will not be able to certify under something called Assurance 14, and I can provide you with more details about that, that our special ed teachers meet those requirements. I understand that the state of Texas has lost billions of dollars for that same reason. So we will be sharing more information with you about that. And I'm very pleased to hear Chair Joachim say that she it is her intent and hope to bring these issues up again in 2020. And I want to assure you that we remain committed to be partners with you in any way we can in providing information and support to address these important issues.
Thank you, Ms. Crist. Welcoming Ms. Schmidt and Superintendent Krieger, Superintendent Gronseth is on deck. Good afternoon. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Daphne. My name is Kate Schmidt, and I'm a teacher. I have lots of other titles, but teacher is the most important. And I couldn't be more proud than to be sitting here next to my superintendent to talk to you about this House Education Bill. So I want to thank all the representatives and your staffs for the time you spent holding committee hearings on issues that affect public education. While we may have lots of different priorities, I hope we can all agree on the benefits of hearing from people on the front lines of educating more than 800,000 Minnesota students. During these hearings, you heard about the desperate need for more counselors and mental health professionals. You heard about the challenges of teaching students who have experienced multiple childhood traumas, a group of kids that is growing every year. You heard about a teacher shortage caused by losing too many well-qualified educators to private sector jobs that are both easier and pay better. You heard about the importance of hiring and, more importantly, retaining teachers of color as a strategy for closing opportunity gaps. You heard about the success of full-service community schools, which put the services and supports that students need within easy reach within our schools. You heard about paraprofessionals who are working second and third jobs after they leave work in the afternoon. They are crying out for training and a pay raise. You heard about the need to adjust the teacher licensure law to protect quality and avoid unintended consequences that are about to play out over Minnesota. But the compromise bill in front of us acknowledges very little of that. The policies and budgets that would show legislators from both chambers heard our voices are not here. For that, I'm very disappointed. While I will let our superintendent talk in detail about finances, I will conclude by noting two outstanding features that are in the bill. The governor and the House set an important precedent by putting money for the special education cross-subsidy in the middle of the funding debate. This will be the first time I can remember that, and I've been a teacher for 30 years, that I can remember that a 2% and 2% increase in the formula won't be diminished by new special education costs. That's huge. Secondly, I want to thank the governor and the House for continuing school-based voluntary pre-K in their initial budgets and insisting that it stay in the final bill. This bill is less than educators have had hoped for. But we know the advocates for public education on this committee fought for every single good thing that's in it. For that, we thank you. Chair Davney, members of the committee, educators look forward to revisiting these issues with you next year.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. Superintendent Krieger, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Mary Krieger, superintendent of Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan Public Schools, our state's fourth largest school district, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here with Kate and address you today. First, know that we appreciate the hard work you do, difficult decisions that you've made in your efforts to secure appropriate funding for education. The 2% increases to the general education funding formula and additional funding to hold the special education cross-subsidy steady will be helpful. We're also grateful for continued funding for voluntary pre-K. We do have 70 little ones that will start kindergarten better because of that funding, and for our safe schools. While this additional funding will be very helpful, it does not make up for years of receiving less than inflationary funding for basic education and a cross-subsidy that, for our district, was $29 million last year. Earlier this year, our school board approved $7 million in budget adjustments for next year, and we face another $18 million budget shortfall the following 2 years. Our budget projections included an assumption of 2% increases on the formula. To avoid the devastating cuts that would be necessary without additional funding, we will be asking voters to increase local property taxes this fall. There's just not anything left that's easy to cut. Class sizes are high, programs are needed to support students, and we've tightened and trimmed everywhere possible. As I mentioned previously, the special education cross-subsidy was $29 million in our district alone. We are absolutely committed to serving all of our students. We do not over-identify, nor do we over-serve our students with disabilities. We do have more students with higher needs. We look to the state and federal level of government to help us figure out how we can fund for these essential services without a devastating impact for all of our students. In closing, I want to thank Education Minnesota and Kate Schmidt, president of the Dakota County United Educators, for their support and collaboration in our mission of educating students. We're united in our foundational belief of the importance of a robust, successful school system. Our system reflects the strengths and talents of our teachers. Thank you again for the work that you do and the opportunity today. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Superintendent Gronseth, followed by Dr. Bunn. Welcome back to the committee.
Chair Davney, honorable members of the committee, thank you. Thank you for all of your work this session. I know that I've had the opportunity to meet with many of you individually and to meet with you collectively. And I appreciate the work that you've put in. The 2 and 2% increase, as others have said, is greatly appreciated. The last time I testified before this body, I told you about the wide disparity between what our what our own school spends on special education and what our charter school spends on special education. And we have maintained a 1% increase in our special education spending. We've cut our programs. We've cut services to students to be able to catch up. And in that time, our charter school has increased in 11%. And while we have been spending about $11,000 per student, our charter school has spent $28,000 per student. This is not sustainable for us now or in the future. We need to see changes, and we know that you have advocated for those changes. We're fortunate enough to pass a referendum locally that will increase our funds by $5 million a year. We have not been able to increase the services that we provide to our community because the hole in our budget keeps increasing. It keeps getting bigger. We came before you with a proposal to cap the expenditures of the charter school, to adjust our base, to help us to recoup some of the losses that we've had in our reserves. Our reserves are gone, and the House was kind enough to provide for $1 million in the bill. Unfortunately, the Senate did not share that understanding of our situation and include it in their side. But we do recognize the work that you put in to try to help address the unique issues in Duluth. We're disappointed that our unique situation as an outlier in the special education formula was not included in the end. But we thank you for your time. We thank you for your willingness to meet with us, for listening, for taking action. And please know that we are very ready to address what has been deemed policy issues in the future with you, beside you, to try to make a better future for our students. We also appreciate the efforts to address the cross-subsidy. For us, that is $9.4 million. The aid that has been put in place means about $275,000 for us. So it is a small help, but we have a long way to go. And please know that we appreciate your efforts and that we are ready to stand beside you to do whatever it takes to make progress in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Dr. Bunn, followed by Gary Amoroso. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Julie Bunn. I serve as Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. Chair Dabney, members of the committee, I rise to personally thank you for the including partial funding of the Council's request in the omnibus bill. The Council recognizes the significant constraint you were facing with the target you were given, and we are grateful for your consideration. The Council is committed to ensuring that Minnesota teachers have the training, support, and resources they need to successfully deliver K-12 economic standards in their classrooms. Whether they are integrating economic and personal finance concepts into the discussion of children's literature or the teaching of math in their third grade course, or viewing sustainability through an economics lens in their middle school global studies or ecology lesson, or teaching advanced placement or college in the schools in their economics to high school seniors. Moving forward, the Council will continue conversations with the Departments of Education, Commerce, Agriculture, and Employment and Economic Development, as well as all parties and stakeholders concerned with ensuring all Minnesota students receive an economics and personal finance education prior to high school graduation, around how to adequately and sustainably fund teacher professional development and personal finance and economics education. We also look forward to working with all stakeholders to better understand the professional development, workforce, and curricular needs in these areas. Finally, the council would like to extend a special thanks to the chair, members of the conference committee, and the council bill chief author, Representative Sandel, and the co-authors, Representatives Robbins, Joachim, Kreisha, Hare, Edelson, Carlson, and Erickson. Representatives, we just want to say a final thank you for your time and for your service to our state.
Thank you, Dr. Bunn. Mr. Amoroso? Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of Minnesota Association of School Administrators. So much has been said already, but I do want to thank the chair, the committee, the staff, for all the work that they've put in since January. Want to also share that we're very grateful for most of our financial asks coming to fruition this year with the formula, with the special ed funding, VPK, and school safety. Put a face on it a little bit. I was at a meeting this morning of Southwest superintendents in Slayton, and out of the group in that room, five of them will now be able to run the VPK programs with funding. And so they were very grateful and very pleased that they're going to be able to continue to serve their students. We talked about the school safety opportunity ahead, and again, they were very grateful that it wasn't going to be a grant process, that whatever resources are hopefully available will be spread across on a per-pupil basis, and that's something they felt was more fair for them than the process that was used last year. So we thank you for that. With that, I'm already looking forward to 2020, and I'm hoping that our state has a positive financial 8 or 9 months so that as revenues come in, revenues are above projections, and though we understand that it is a policy year next year, we're also hoping that there might be some opportunities, Mr. Chair, to talk about providing additional resources to school that weren't available this year. With that, I thank all of you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hartman. My apologies. I wouldn't have said those things if I'd seen your name on the list. I would have held them to now, but they're still true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very kind. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure and honor to work with this committee. I've joked over the years that we represent the 20% of people with hearing loss in the state, and we've been in every committee except for agriculture, and somebody said that farmers have noise-induced hearing loss, so someday somebody will be before the Agriculture Committee. So thank you for your very kind words, and I'm very deeply humbled. It's been very fun to do this work. I just wanted to thank you and take the time to thank you for including the funding for the academies. The academies have been around for well over 100 years and provide a lot of the support for kids that are deaf and hard of hearing from the rural areas, so they're able to get the education they need and an environment with peers who are deaf, who their teachers are deaf, the kids are deaf, it's normal to be deaf. They're not the special kid in the classroom. It's a language-rich environment. And I want to say that we're disappointed that Metro Deaf School wasn't able to make it in this year for the Birth to Three, and they'll be telling you a little bit more about that, and that they provide that same environment, and the only kids that are left out in the metro area for the parents that don't have the opportunity or ability to move to Faribault, they provide the same level of service in the metro area, and Birth to Three is the only age group that's left out. So they'll be talking a little bit more about that. And last, I just wanted to say that I really recommend to this committee to brag a little bit about our commission and the work we're doing with education. We have an education collaborative, and we work across state agencies, and we are driven by data. And I believe that we're the only special education group that is using the SLEDS data, the state longitudinal education system. So we're able to track a kid from the time that they are born until they go into employment. And we have interagency agreements sharing that information. And so we're able now to use strategic investments to look at where are kids making it and where they're making it individually, but also in aggregate. Just recommend that you, if you're looking at the cost of higher education, that might be one way of addressing it and using resources effectively. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hartnett. Susan Lane Outlaw from the Metro Deaf School. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Susan Lane Outlaw, and I'm the Executive Director at Metro Deaf School, and I do want to thank the committee it's been amazing to watch you work and to watch the staff come every day with new things, changes that quickly occur. I do want to say Metro Deaf School is located, as Mary Hartnett had mentioned, in the Twin Cities. We serve over 30 different school districts, and over 80% of our students are district placed. So the resident districts are placing with us. We're the only charter school that has resident districts placing with us. And we have remained, we've actually brought our bill back down by $9,000. I mean, we've really worked hard to get our bill back down. We cost less than the cost of an interpreter for one child. So I do want to, I hope, I know there's a lot of discussion about bill back and cross subsidy that has gone on, and I know that that's going to continue to be an issue as we talk to other resident districts. But I do hope that if a task force is formed, that we can be a part of that, because we do work with those districts. They're involved in all the IEP meetings, and they're involved in all the service decisions. So we don't work. We're not going rogue by any means. And I'm going to have my principal, Melissa Sweetmilk, discuss a little bit about birth to three.
Thank you, Dr. Lynn Outlaw. Ms. Sweetmilk, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Would like to also thank you for all of your hard work. I do know that this session has been quite a bit of work and difficult decisions that were made. I did want to talk with some of you. Maybe some of you have recognized me from 2015 when I came and testified in regards to legislation for the pre-K and the funding for all of the pre-K students who are deaf and hard of hearing. We do feel like being in a language-rich environment, having them have 100% access to their first language instead of waiting until they are in kindergarten is very beneficial. And legislation did pass that. However, after that, we learned from MDE that they didn't include the birth to three. That was not included in that bill. And so that's why we came back to legislature this year, because we feel it's very vital and critical for our babies who are very young for them to have access to language. Speaking for myself, I had language from the age of 10 months old. So it's been a passion of ours. At the same time, as I mentioned, I know that all of you are working very hard. You have specific targets and difficult decisions to make. So next year, we will be back, and we will again propose this, and we'll continue working towards this to make sure that our young babies and students have the service, and their families and otherwise have the supports that they need from the day that they are diagnosed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify? Anyone else? Ms. Cox. Ms. Cox, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's been a long time since I've been in the Education Committee, and it's been a delight. My name is Barbara Cox. I'm from Health Partners, but I'm testifying on behalf of the Reach Out and Read program. Because the doctors that work in the program are busy doctoring. They are working with the kids and the families who will benefit so greatly from this program. Thank you for your support to expand the program to other clinics and areas of the state. We appreciate it very much, and we look forward to hosting you at a Reach Out and Read clinic and sharing with you the impact of these funds. I hope after this weekend you all get a little time to read something other than legislative language.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify? Mr. Heller, batting cleanup.
Thank you, Chair, and people on the Finance Division in the House. On May 22nd, 2019, my name is Rick Heller, unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional and officially represent the print disabled. You find Twice Exceptional in House File 1370 on line 1.18. Also, there's another bill that just got a fiscal note on it, which is another gifted bill in the House, which has over 12 authors on it, 2655. So there's some interest in this Twice Exceptional language. Hopefully next year you'll consider that. As you know, there is a a similar bill over in the Senate on the 1970 bill. Mr. Pratt said he's going to run a fiscal note on that, so hopefully have some numbers to work on a non-fiscal year. I don't know what that means. There was a couple bills that were non-fiscal this year that never had discussion in conference committee, which was kind of odd because one part had to do with the WHO, which was the Senate, who are twice exceptional, who are print disabled. Senators were encouraged to identify those on IEPs. And the what? The Minnesota Department of Education has some special education forms they created since 2015, a mandate, a guide that they created, which does not have identification on there. Hopefully they took it seriously this year that they might put that on their forms, especially the guidance and strong support of best practices for people to know just who are the gifted and talented, specifically twice exceptional people with print disabilities. They have guiding documents on this. I've provided it before to this committee years before and tried to do that again. Yet, again, it didn't have any discussion without a fiscal note. So I'm not sure how much interest there is on this stuff, frankly, if before my time, but hopefully the State Department is thinking about doing something that they asked me to put my thumbprint on last December, and I decided not to. I thought I'd bring it up here to make leaders aware of it. I thought they were interested enough because they wanted it in their Senate and House file, but for some reason they didn't want to bring it up. So I did provide you some handouts to the chair regarding accessibility. There's at least the currently approximately 11 pages that are not posted from the last week and for today. And I don't know how you can use the word transparency. You have open meeting, which is great for people to talk, but if you can't post stuff in a timely manner for the public, and when you will or if you ever will, this has been an ongoing ADA request. It's. I understand there perhaps might be a bill that might happen to renumber it called 1962 here in the House, which is Ms. Hartnett was heavily involved in to get the legislature to move the ball in that way. One thing you really want to consider, everybody, when we start thinking about the legislature wanting to apply what functional accessibility is based on universal design for learning, or I should just say universal design. When Ms. Hartnett in summer last year said everybody can benefit from Cole's captioning, it just wasn't just talking about deaf people. And we all need to reevaluate what it is to read well. Is it that we can read, or is it that we can understand oral English? And frankly, I think it's that we can understand oral English by how we acquire it and interact with our peers and enjoy those services that the legislature can apply to the public for civic engagement. Until we do that, until we go to Plan B, and it's, if you want to focus on every kid reading well by third grade, what does that mean? Independently? And are you going to have Plan B? What point are you going to use this technology? And by golly, guess what? The State Department of Education just came out with their technology plan. Last one was created in 2011. Hopefully they'll put that link into their special education forms, because that's a must that they consider that. And then we get into other items that, how do parents understand that? Why is assistive technology required for special ed? And I'll say this really simply. I believe it's not special ed. I just believe how people effectively acquire the printed word. We can call it achievement gap, but unless those kids in the school district aren't applying the 508 accessibility laws, and there's no law now other than federal, and there's no one monitoring it.
Good That's questions it. For over there.
So anyways, once again, I provided a handout with DD and DDD. The legislature is currently saying that their PDFs meet the standards. However, here we got a bill right now which is only a PDF. It's not a bill. It's a revisor number. And the structural and underlying language you'll find under DD does not meet the accessibility standards for transparency in a special session. Once again, 1962 might be a process that'd be helpful for people to understand this as we plug in our state dollars, not just here, but with the nonprofits and profits up here using our dollars, and that we want everybody to have equal opportunity in the employment process. So thank you again for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Any closing comments by members? Representative Kunesh-Badin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to just once again extend our appreciation for all the hard work that you and this committee and this conference and Chair Joachim put in. This is my first time around in going through this conference system, and I'm just blown away by the amount of time and dedication that you've put in. I'm really excited about the 2-in-2 increase, the cross-subsidy for special ed, and, of course, the equalization funding for the BIE schools is so important. A little disappointed that all the elements of the increased teacher of color and Indigenous Teachers Act didn't get into our bills, but we'll continue to working on that along with community solutions for healthy child development and, of course, the teacher licensing. So I just want to say on behalf of all of us, thank you very much, and also to the staff that has put in hours and hours. It just boggles my mind, the knowledge that they possess and are able to disseminate this information so well to us. So much thanks.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Badin. Let me take this opportunity to thank the members for this session's work. I hope you see reflection of the discussions and the values and the priorities of this committee in the final document. I will see you at the special session. Thank you all very much. We are adjourned.